Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone and welcome to the 61st episode of Praticamente Inglese. How's it going, guys? Welcome back. Another week together. What a week. We will have Sanremo Festival, which is very popular in Italy, as we all know. We elected a few hours ago, I would say we re-elected our president of Italy. Today, I will have a guest in the podcast. She is an interpreter and also a professional translator. Her name is Sabrina Sbaccanti, and she will be with me in a few minutes. Before doing that, let me switch in Italian. I have a couple of things to tell you, and then we'll get back to the interview. Prima di tutto, ragazzi, bentornati al 61esimo episodio di Praticamente Inglese. Oggi, come vi dicevo, intervisterò a brevissimo Sabrina Sbaccanti. Lei è un'interprete, anche una traduttrice, quindi cercherò di carpire quanti più consigli possibili, sia come sempre, come ormai fa parte del format, di come i tre consigli su come migliorare l'inglese in maniera pratica, cioè cosa mettere in atto. Quest'anno abbiamo detto che è l'anno dell'inglese, quindi dai, ce la dobbiamo fare. E poi ovviamente qualche curiosità circa il ruolo dell'interprete, del traduttore, qualche parolina di quelle che si traducono male, oppure cercherò anche di chiederle un pochino del lavoro dell'interprete e della traduttrice, insomma, che sicuramente è molto complesso. E poi ovviamente vi volevo ricordare della room di Clubhouse, che ormai faccio tutti i venerdì alle ore 13, è un modo per conoscerci e farci quattro chiacchiere in inglese. Nell'ultima room c'è stato Rafael Di Furia, una vecchia nostra conoscenza, l'ho intervistato nell'episodio 39 e sono stato super contento di riascoltarlo. Quindi adesso su Clubhouse, se andate sul profilo del club Praticamente Inglese o sul mio profilo, potete riascoltare le room precedenti e quindi potrete riascoltare questa bella conversazione con Rafael, dove mi ha spiegato, insomma, la sua nuova vita in Portogallo. What else, guys? Vi voglio ricordare anche, se possibile, di lasciarmi una review, una 5-star review su Spotify o Apple Podcast. È sempre importante, perché tante persone non conoscono praticamente inglese e si basano anche sulle review per capire se un podcast può essere interessante, se lo trovate interessante. Quindi datemi una mano sotto questo aspetto. So, let's get started with today's episode and welcome to Sabrina Sbaccanti. Hi, Sabrina!
Hi, Mattia, and hi to every one of our listeners today. It's great being here, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks to you. It's a pleasure for me. First of all, I would say, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? Because you're such an amazing person, and also you are a translator, right?
Exactly, yeah. So my name is Sabrina, as you can probably see here, and I work as a translator and interpreter. And yes, those are two different things, and we will get into this later on. I'm currently 28 and based in a small town in Lombardy, so Italy, nearby Milan. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in this industry since 2016, give or take, and then I switched to full-time freelancing in the industry in 2018. Currently, my working languages include English, of course, mm-hmm. Portuguese and Chinese, aside, of course, from Italian, which is my native language.
Chinese. Wow.
Yeah. Mandarin, to be precise.
And I assume it's quite difficult, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's a great shortage of, intermediate learners stuff for Chinese out there. So maybe you want to get into that too.
Oh, okay. I should think about it. It was so difficult for me to learn English. No, I'm joking. But I understand that Chinese is a growing language, because also because of business, because there are so many factories there and the export is huge in China as well, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, import-exports relationship are growing ever stronger. And that was the case actually before the pandemic. As you may imagine, now things have slowed down a little bit, but the cooperation in between Italy and China has always been very strong. So Chinese is very hard. No, by no means, I don't want to downplay it, but English is hard too, but not as much as Chinese is.
Yeah.
Chinese is completely insane, but it's fun too. It's a very fun language to learn.
It's true. And English is right now a standard all over the world, no?
Yeah.
So it's very important, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you are Portuguese or if you are, Spanish, Italian. If you speak English, you can communicate with all the world.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why, you know, it's so important for people who are listening to this podcast today to really make use of their time and really carefully listen to whatever we're going to say, because I think we're going to have a great one today.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm very curious to know a little bit more about, you know, your job. First thing first, what's the difference between translating and interpreting?
All right. So the key difference here would be that translators work with texts, so with the written word, whereas interpreters work with speeches or the spoken word. So if, let's say, you have to set up a conference and there's going to be lots of different speakers from different countries, you're going to need an interpreter there for sure, actually more than two for each pair of languages you're going to have to work with. So let's say that you have Italian guests and German guests, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have at least two interpreters, which go both into Italian and into German. And so is the case for every other language. Whereas, for example, if your company has to export something to another country, they may have some commercial documents translated, and that's where translators step in. But that's the key difference. So there's dedicated training for both. Of course, you learn how to translate, because, you know, it's not as easy as it looks, and everybody's an expert until they do it.
yeah,
and then
true.
For interpreting, you know, there are different modes. So you may have gone to, I don't know, a conference or something where there was somebody on stage speaking a foreign language, and then another person scribbling down just for their life on this tiny little notepad, and then repeating the speech that was made into, I don't know, Italian in this case, let's say. Mm-hmm. This is what it's called consecutive interpreting, because you speak for one bit and then you translate. Whereas the most common form of interpreting right now, because it's the most time-saving one, I would say, is simultaneous interpreting. So you translate into another language as the person speaks, mm-hmm. which, of course, requires a booth or, in remote cases, good pair of headphones, good connection, and a good microphone.
Let's switch in Italian just for a second.
Yeah.
Mi interessa tantissimo capire anche che tipo di predisposizione tu debba avere, no? Per nel momento in cui tu ascolti immediatamente parlare in italiano o in inglese.
Sì, guarda, quella è una delle cose più complicate forse che si possono fare come modalità di interpretazione, e all'inizio, per esempio, quando si comincia a fare pratica, perché chiaramente non vuol dire, cioè, sapere due lingue non vuol dire essere in grado di fare l'interpretazione simultanea, no?
Certo.
Quindi all'inizio si inizia magari ascoltando un testo in italiano per chi è madrelingua italiano e ripetendolo ad alta voce. E già lì, ti assicuro, le prime volte ne esci col cervello in pappa, cioè completamente fritto. Poi piano piano inizi a fare la stessa cosa però o dalla lingua straniera verso la tua lingua madre o viceversa. E diciamo la cosa importante è che tu intanto procedi gradualmente, perché chiaramente non è che puoi cominciare la prima volta e farti 30 minuti sparati così di fila. Ti assicuro che già i primi 10 sono una tragedia. Io non mi scorderò mai la stanchezza dei giorni in cui facevo all'università le prime pratiche. E Poi soprattutto mentre tu interpreti simultaneamente, devi ascoltare quello che viene detto in una lingua, devi cominciare a pensare a come lo traduci, devi tradurlo, quindi parlare sopra quell'altra persona che parla sotto, chiaramente, perché tutte queste cose appunto succedono simultaneamente, e poi devi ascoltarti, cioè tu devi fare attenzione a dove vanno a finire le tue frasi.
Chiaro.
E per esempio, facciamo l'esempio dall'inglese all'italiano, l'inglese è molto conciso, è molto più rapido, molto più economico, se vogliamo, rispetto all'italiano. Anche proprio foneticamente, cioè le parole italiane, molte sono parole molto lunghe. Quindi se quello sotto ha detto tre frasi e tu sei ancora a metà della prima, devi comunque fare attenzione a dove stai andando con la tua frase iniziale e poi a seguire tutto il resto.
E continuare a seguire quello che dice.
Esatto.
Pazzesco. Invece per quanto riguarda la traduzione, hai molto più tempo, tra virgolette, nel senso che hai un testo, eccetera, però entra un pochino quella che è la tua professionalità, poi ne parleremo perché te lo vorrò chiedere,
certo,
rispetto a come professionalmente si traduce, no? Rispetto a quello che potrebbe essere Google Translate o qualcosa simile, insomma, che
sì,
ci sono delle cose imbarazzanti in giro.
Sì, il famosissimo è l'esempio del paper jam, non so se l'hai visto online.
No.
E era verso lo spagnolo, era un meme che circolava tantissimo tempo fa, che ti dicevano, ah davvero fra 10 anni i traduttori non avranno più un lavoro, una cosa del genere, e c'era questo screenshot di Google Translate dove in inglese c'era paper jam e in spagnolo era uscito l'equivalente di marmellata di carta.
Ah, ok.
Quando invece paper jam è semplicemente che ti sei inceppata la stampante.
Certo, certo, certo. But listen, let's get back to English.
Yeah.
You said something very interesting about, you know, if you speak or you understand English and Italian, it doesn't matter, because, you know, translating, interpreting is another thing, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, can anyone who speaks two or more languages can work as a translator or an interpreter? No, I assume, right?
Well, ideally they could start training, if they're not trained already, to work as a translator or interpreter, because as I was saying before, both in English and in Italian, it takes a completely different skill set, which is kind of unnatural if you think about it, because we're all taught, like since we were kids, to wait for a person to stop speaking before we start speaking, right? So mm-hmm. speaking on top of each other is kind of unnatural. And on top of that, you're speaking in another language. So you really have to, in some way, reroute your brain and the way it works. And this is not inherent to being able to speak one or more languages. Because one of the other aspects, which is really underrated, is that if you speak two or more languages, you're not necessarily an expert in a certain field. Let's say one of my key specializations is insurance and finance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Took me years to get to where I am. Took me plenty of studying. I've lost count of the hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, I could speak English with like fine, just fine, even before I started specializing in this. But if you ask me to translate, I don't know, some weird regulation framework for the insurance regulator in Italy, just like that off the top of my head, I would have had no idea, right? Mm,
true, true.
So you need to specialize and to actually be knowledgeable about a certain area.
Technical words, very technical words, and, you know, things that usually are translated in a way, but the sense is another. Kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to differentiate that too. Because for instance, in legal, which I do not do, because, you know, it's a whole can of worms, and I do not have the knowledge to deal with that. But let's say in legal, even translating the mode of a verb can make a ton of a difference. And yeah, that's actually legally binding. So if in Italian you say something like, può essere anche, you have to be really careful how you translate that into another language, because that has ramifications. So you have to be really aware, not only of your language and the foreign language that matter, but also of the concrete field we're talking about right now.
Okay. Yeah, true. Definitely. And what does it take to become an interpreter or a translator in terms of, I would say, education, courses, things like that?
So you need to do specialized training, which it goes beyond what we would normally call secondary education here in Italy. So you do your bachelor's or laurea triennale, which is usually preparatory, but you don't really get into the nitty-gritty of it. That you do during what we call laurea magistrale or master's degree. So those are 2 years of practical training, and you're supposed to be fully proficient, both, of course, in your native language and the foreign languages you want to work with in the future. So full proficiency, meaning at least, at the very least, a C1, better yet, C2 level. It's the basics. Like, if you don't have that, don't even get started, because it's going to get harder and harder.
Perché, giustamente, facciamo un piccolo recap. Quando tu dici C1, C2, perché ci sono dei livelli che sono internazionalmente riconosciuti da alcuni standard, dove sei, se non sbaglio, i 2A, i 2B e i 2C, no?
Esatto.
Quindi A è il livello minore, più basso, e invece quando sei al pari di un madrelingua sei C2, no? Giusto?
Esattamente, sì.
E invece se parli molto bene sei un C1, e gli intermediate, quelli che parlicchiano un pochino, sono tra il B1 e il B2, no? Giusto? Questo
esatto,
è un po'.
Esatto, sì.
Chiarissimo.
B2 ti direi anche un upper intermediate.
Upper intermediate.
Sì.
Lo so perché ho intervistato nell'arco degli episodi altre persone che mi hanno dato queste informazioni, e anche, lo vorrei ripetere, e non so se sei d'accordo, che prendere un certificato per dimostrare che il tuo livello di inglese dipende, che tipo di certificato, il certificato dipende da che uso ne devi fare, insomma, perché dici, ah, io prendo questo certificato, ma che uso ne devi fare? Perché in America c'è uno standard, in Inghilterra ce n'è un altro, se devi fare, se ti serve per l'education, per la scuola, te ne serve uno, e così via, no? Giusto?
Sì, esatto. Poi dipende anche molto, questa è un po' un mio punto di vista molto personale, quindi sentiti poi libero di contraddirmi o meno.
Ok.
Però in passato l'esperienza che ho avuto nel preparare delle persone tramite corsi privati, eccetera, a questo tipo di certificazione, ecco, mi sembrava spesso di preparare più all'esame di turno, quindi il TOEFL o quello che fosse, insomma, piuttosto che ai contenuti. Cioè,
chiaro,
siccome ognuno ha poi i propri standard per il test e per rilasciare questo certificato, non devi solo essere in grado di sostenerlo contenutisticamente, ma devi anche essere preparato a, ok, queste domande qua mi fanno in questa maniera qui, quindi piuttosto invece che farmi quell'altro me l'avrebbe fatto in quella maniera. Cioè, è un po' un ginepraio, devo dire.
Sì, sì. Ma questo è un po' ovunque, no? Spesso e volentieri quando si fanno questi esami, e più il fatto di andarti a pescare su cose che poi magari nella lingua non esistono, non sentirai mai determinati idiomi, cioè, o no?
Guarda, ti faccio ridere. Io al liceo cannavo malissimo tutti i test di comprensione.
Okay.
Ma non perché non capissi. Ti parlo di inglese, e non perché non capissi, ma perché l'interpretazione che davo io di una determinata risposta era magari quella, io davo la risposta simile a quella giusta. Poi, domandando, dicevo, ma scusa, perché non va bene? Perché io da questa informazione ho dedotto che poteva essere anche così, e da lì ho dato la mia risposta. E la risposta dell'insegnante di turno di solito era, ma la risposta giusta è quella.
Certo,
e ho
ovvio.
Capito, però cioè, non è che ti ho detto blu per giallo,
certo,
ti ho detto arancione chiaro, nel senso.
I know, you know, in Italy we're a little bit different compared to other people around the world. We all know about it, but anyway, I'm very curious to know more. Also because, you know, this podcast is all about, si chiama Praticamente Inglese, because it's very practical.
Yeah.
I kind of try to give value to the audience through my great guests, because of their knowledge and your knowledge. So I'm very curious, you know, you were talking about translation, that maybe you can give us some, I don't know, examples of kind of translation that makes no sense in English, things that we do in Italy, or maybe we translate from English. You know, we talked a lot about smart working. We talked
that
a lot.
That was on the list.
And everybody, everybody is saying, no, no way. Smart is, you know, intelligente, clever, no? Un lavoro intelligente non è il fatto di lavorare da casa, è remote working from home, working remotely, but not smart working. Do you have any more examples?
Yeah, so these would be what we call in linguistics false anglicisms, so falsi anglicismi in Italian, and it's basically words whose meaning in Italian is different from the one they have in English. However, formally they look similar. Let's make a very you know, straightforward example. In Italy we say basket for basketball.
Yeah.
But if you say basket meaning the sports to a native English speaker, they will think of a box or something you put stuff into, not the sports, not basketball, right?
Yeah.
Because basketball would be the right way of saying it. Another example I could think of, well, you said smart working, which drives me insane every single time. I mean, every time I hear somebody saying, sono in smart, I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does it mean to be in smart? Is it a state? Is it a way of being? Is it a mindset?
Is a state of mind.
Yeah, exactly. Smart state of mind, right? Oh, well. Perhaps this not maybe as classy, but I think it really drives the whole message home. But, you know, when you go to the bathroom in Italy, we have il water, which comes from water, acqua. However, you do not say water to say that you need to go to the toilet in English, right? Then we have box, especially in Northern Italy. I don't know, where are you from, by the way?
I'm from Pescara, the middle of Italy, let's say.
Actually, I was born in Ancona, so.
Okay, very close, very close.
So here in Northern Italy, they say, oh, I have put my car in the box. Quindi ho messo l'auto nel box. And, you know, intuitively, I understood what they meant, but the word box, again, scatola, does not mean garage, which is what you actually mean, which is weird because in other areas of Italy, we do say garage, like ho messo l'auto in garage.
We do the same.
Then we have lifting. So if you want to have some work done on your face, because, you know, you're aging or you want to take some wrinkles out or just, you know, give it a straight out, you do not have a lifting in English. You have a facelift. Because if you say lifting, people will ask, oh, was that heavy?
Yeah.
Was your face heavy? What's the point?
Lifting like, come sollevare, no? Lo
esatto, esatto. Sì, lifting.
Non è il lifting che faccio al viso, insomma.
Esatto. That would be a facelift. Then another curious one was camping. So you may find yourself going around Italy and especially outside of the main cities, you know, tourist cities, you may find camping. And that would be a campsite or a camping area at the most. But camping per se in English just designates the overall experience and activity of going camping. So
no, diciamo non è proprio il campeggio.
Esatto.
È più il concetto di andare fuori e andare alla natura, no? Fare
con la
un'esperienza.
Tenda,
esatto.
Sì. Esatto. Il falò, poi ci sono anche, come si chiamano, gli marshmallow che mettono sul fuoco e tutto il resto appresso.
Certo.
Esatto.
Ma più che altro, qualcosa del day-to-day nel business, cioè nel senso, cose che spesso e volentieri tu ritrovi o come traduzioni sbagliate che devi correggere, perché sono state fatte magari su Google Translate, perché sono fatte da una persona che non è un professionista, cose di questo genere, ma che sono magari più connesse al business, al mondo lavorativo, cosa così, se ti viene in mente qualcosa e se ce lo dici, così non facciamo più questi errori.
Assolutamente. Guarda, una mi viene in mente che la sento sempre e anche lì vorrei dare capocciate a uno spigolo, quando le persone in italiano dicono... Sono confidente che questa cosa succederà, questo progetto andrà bene, questa cosa verrà fatta. Ma in italiano tu non sei confidente di qualcosa, al massimo di qualcuno, e sei quindi sei colui che ascolta un segreto o una cosa comunque che devi tenere per te, che ti viene detta da un'altra persona. Si direbbe sono fiducioso, però questo è un classico esempio di calco per cui in inglese si dice I'm confident that this will happen, eccetera, eccetera, e quindi noi, siccome confidente esiste in italiano ma non con quel significato, la usiamo erroneamente così.
Così come spesso e volentieri, questo è un errore che faccio anch'io, quando io voglio schedulare un meeting.
Scusa,
quando voglio scheduliamo un meeting, ormai questi termini sono entrati un po' nel nostro dire comune, spesso e volentieri portati da persone che ovviamente lavorano in contesti dove tutto il giorno hanno a che fare con persone in inglese e quindi si portano dietro questi termini. Cioè, dicevo l'altra volta, sono molto skillato, no? Oppure, come hai detto tu, sono molto confidente che...
No, guarda, voglio fare una doverosa premessa, perché sennò sembra che siamo qui a bacchettare le persone, ma non è assolutamente questo, e lungi da me essere una purista dell'italiano, perché quello, ecco, un altro bel ginepraio che lasciamo stare. Però effettivamente a volte mi sembra che ci sia un po' di pigrizia mentale, perché prendiamo appunto, come facevi l'esempio tu, schedulare, ecco, noi abbiamo un equivalente italiano, basta solo girarci un po' attorno, o se vogliamo fare la tecnica, fare una perifrasi. Perché per esempio anche schedulare è un altro che sento tantissimo, e potremmo, per dirla in italiano vero, fra virgolette, potremmo dire mettere in calendario. Sì, è più lunga, non è così immediata, non è così rapida. Poi se stai parlando con un tuo collega magari in ufficio e dici schedulare, ti capisce benissimo, voglio dire.
Certo.
Però è un pochino di pigrizia mentale, ed ecco, questa per esempio è una delle cose peggiori che si possono avere come traduttori. Ti dico, ieri sto lavorando a un progetto a quattro mani con un mio amico e collega, no? Sì. Stiamo traducendo l'interfaccia di un sito e di un'applicazione verso l'italiano. Benissimo, abbiamo trovato la parola branding e siamo, penso, la 14ª telefonata di almeno mezz'ora su come tradurre questo benedetto branding a seconda del contesto, a seconda dell'uso, eccetera, eccetera. E quello è esattamente il tipo di esercizio che uno deve un po', diciamo, imparare a fare se vuole fare questo mestiere, perché se tu scrivi in un rapporto, facciamo finta, per il lavoro, schedulare...
Certo, ma poi questi termini che io adesso l'altra volta lo dicevo, cioè questi termini, marketing, branding, ormai, cioè, non li puoi neanche più tradurre, secondo me, in italiano, perché ormai fanno parte di un contesto, di una dimensione... no, che non esci, insomma, quindi dovresti mantenerli, secondo me, con il termine inglese, insomma, ecco.
Sì, poi questo per esempio è sempre una discussione molto interessante, perché si parla di concetti nuovi, cioè il marketing, anche l'informatica, se vogliamo, cioè noi non traduciamo un mouse, al contrario dei nostri cugini spagnoli e francesi che lo traducono, noi non traduciamo computer. Quindi secondo me tenere per ambiti nuovi dove un equivalente neanche concettuale c'era prima, ci sta assolutamente, e anzi è quasi accanimento voler per forza trovare un equivalente in italiano, perché non è che mi posso mettere a dire adesso accendo il computatore e lavoro o adesso prendo il mio... ratto.
Last time I said a hard disk is not translatable, and it is not true, because you say disco rigido.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But
it's
computer
is
very difficult, computer, to translate computer, or marketing. Marketing is very difficult to translate. But anyway, Sabrina, what I usually say to all my guests, and what I think is very useful for the listeners, for the audience, is if you can give us three tips on how to improve English in terms of speaking English, understanding English, things like that, things that you think are very useful and you can practically do tomorrow, let's say.
All right, so tip number one, I'm sure pretty much everybody else already said it and or heard it at some point in their life, but read your favorite book, magazine, whatever, or watch your favorite movie or TV show in English, sure, with subtitles at first if you need them. But I want to be specific here, and I'm saying favorite because especially if you are starting out at the very beginning, or you still feel a little bit shaky in your comprehension, like written and listening comprehension, you already know the story, right? Because it's your favorite book or favorite movie, so you've probably watched it or read it more than once. You know the story, you know the characters, and you don't have to focus on understanding what's going on.
True.
Rather, you can focus on what's being said and how. True. So find something you have, this is a bit cheesy, I know, an emotional connection with somehow, and watch it or read it in English. Just pretty much anything you can do in English, just do it, because it's going to improve your fluency and understanding in no time. You have to be consistent, though. It's not like you can do 1 hour a week and then complain because you've got no results. You got to set some time aside and just put in the work.
Yeah, you should create a sort of routine.
Yeah.
You know that I released this episode a couple of weeks ago about, okay, let's make it happen. A New Year's resolution, you know, 2022. Yeah. Let's start to better understand English and da 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 da. And so I said, okay, one of those tips was, okay, why don't you watch something, as you said, that you already know, maybe because you watched that movie maybe 10 times, or if you are very interested about, I don't know, marketing, for example, yeah, you can watch a video about marketing strategy. So you train your English, but at the same time, you get information on something that you are very interested about, let's say.
Yeah, and you're doing CPD, so continuous professional development, at the same time, which is a win-win.
Yeah, great tip. The first one is common, but at the same time is like crucial.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the basics are the basics for one or more reasons, right? So really set some time aside and make it consistent and make it about something that you love and ideally already know about. So you can focus more on how things are being said rather than what is being said. The second one, and I believe this is professional hazard, but one very common mistake that I see or hear when people speak in English, like when Italians speak English or write in English, is that they translated that from Italian. So you have to start thinking in English, which is a major headache at first. I know, I've been there. So I sympathize. I really do. But if you start speaking in English, maybe at first you won't be able to make like this full, complete, complex sentences with nuances and whatever, but with time it will become more natural to you and you will start sounding more fluent as well. You will start sounding more English-like, if you will.
Yeah, it's true, definitely. Also, I make this mistake as well because, you know, it's very, very difficult to think in English. And also, if you are working and living in an English country, let's say in the UK, of course, is much, much easier, no?
Yeah, and I mean, this is something that you can build upon, right? So again, this may be professional hazard. Actually, I'm pretty sure it is. But every time I listen to something or read something that I wouldn't immediately know how to translate into English, I note it down, and maybe when I have time or if I do have time at the moment, I look it up straight away. Mm-hmm. So I kind of practice by keeping this in the background and running as if it were a process on your computer to get back to the whole IT thing. Just, you know, trying to think, how would I say this in English, or how would I say this in this language? Look, I wouldn't know how to say this, so I have to look this word up. Or I just heard something that, I don't know, an idiom or something that I wouldn't know how to say in English. Write it down and look it up later on so that you can just, you know, build upon slowly and steadily, but build upon a very consistent base.
Great second tip. What about the third tip?
Well, this again, kind of a given and kind of a repetition, but you have to put in the time, you have to put in the work and spend actually time doing this. And this kind of goes back to the first one we've mentioned, but if you find something that you love, it's not going to be that much of a chore. Mm-hmm. Like saying at the end of a long work day, you're tired, all you want to do is have dinner, take a shower, and just, you know, relax a little bit. But if you kind of experience it as something that you have to do, one more thing on your to-do list, it's just something that you will not retain, you will not actually absorb. And that's crucial, actually. So if you can find something that you like doing, listening to, reading, whatever, set some time aside at the beginning of the week. Let's say this week I will be busier than usual, but I have to set aside at least 2 hours. This week is actually a little lighter on the commitment side, so I can take out 4 hours out of my schedule to do this, this, and that. And, you know, the final part of this tip, not to make it too repetitive, if you will, is to multitask. So everybody has to do, you know, housework. So cleaning, doing the dishes and whatever, vacuuming, I don't know. Just pop your headphones on, listen to a podcast, listen to a video, listen to something that it's not too, you know, dense. Not like, I wouldn't recommend the BBC World News podcast at first because it's kind of dense.
Yeah.
But if you find something, even praticamente inglese,
yeah,
just
true.
Pop it in and listen to it while you're doing other stuff so that you can carve out some extra time to improve your English.
That's great. That's great. And it's key. This third tip is key as well, because it's all about practice, no? So as more you practice, as more you improve. Yeah. Definitely, definitely. That's great. Thank you very much for those tips, because I think they're very important. And I don't know if you have, for example, an advice, a suggestion regarding, I don't know, a particular book or a TV series or a YouTube, I don't know, something that you say, you can say, I would start with this.
Yeah, actually, I'm a big TV show fan, so mm-hmm. I've watched like virtually everything that's out there.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I mean, I no longer have the same time I used to have for this, but if I had to recommend one TV series or show to start from, I would say Friends.
Friends.
Definitely, because it's 20 minutes per episode, so it's not a huge time commitment. It's very, you know, everyday language. It's not technical. It's not like, let's say, Breaking Bad, where they talk about chemistry and stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's completely different. Plus, it's very light. You know, it's a group of friends hanging around together. So it's just something fun to watch. It hasn't aged well, I know, but it's a great place to start. On that same tone, so Friends-like, but if you don't like Friends or have watched it already and they don't particularly like it or something, you have How I Met Your Mother. There's, what was the other one called? The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. That may be for a little more like upper intermediate to advanced mm-hmm. learners, because there's a lot of different accents and slang in there too. But it's a great place to start.
Like,
if
for
you're
example,
an intermediate.
Game of Thrones is like impossible to understand.
Well, that's, I mean, I recommend putting subtitles on for that one at first.
True.
For more advanced learners, I was just yesterday night, I finished watching the first half of the latest season of Ozark,
Ozark
on Netflix. Yeah. And actually, at some point, I needed subtitles too, because they speak with a very thick, like super heavy Missouri accent.
Right.
Which is not your regular, you know, CNN standard American accent. So actually, what this was supposed to go in the tips, but I forgot. Sorry about that. Listen to people from several countries or several areas of the same country.
Yeah, with different accents. So yeah. you can kind of understand the differences between, I don't know, American or a British accent, Australian accent, or South African accent. So many different kind of accents. And also, you were talking about, you know, TV series and things like that, no? And also movies. Yeah. I think when I watched Al Pacino for the first time in English, in English. I mean, we have great actors. We have great Italian actors. But it's completely different when it's another world. I mean, also, I watched Joker, the last Joker.
Beautiful.
Which is amazing. But and I watched that movie in a theater, in an Italian theater cinema, and they were playing the movie in English with Italian subtitles.
Just don't get stuck on the Italian subtitles. Otherwise, you're going to be working like overtime to understand everything that's going on. But yeah, that's and actually the Joker, the last one, amazing. I just watched it like with the I think it was 3 years late. I was 3 years late to the party, but still got there nonetheless. I just watched it like a couple of weeks ago and it was amazing.
Yeah. True.
And the accents there too. I mean, if you're exposed to different accents, you will then start to learn that people, let's say from New York, say this word with this like particular kind of pronunciation, and then you'll be able to figure it out. Even if you don't know how to write that word, you'll be able to spell it out, which is very important too. So yeah, go get exposed to several different accents. It's good for you.
Great, great. Now, the last thing I want to ask you is, I mean, where can we find you? Because I always ask to my guests, not if you want to be found, of course.
Yeah.
if you have, I don't know, a LinkedIn profile, a website, or you are on Instagram. You know, there are so many different channels nowadays. Where can we find Sabrina out there?
So first of all, yes, please do go ahead and find me if you need me. You can find me on Instagram, Sabrina Sbaccanti _interpreter. You can find me on LinkedIn, Sabrina Sbaccanti, and on my website, which, surprise, sabrinasbaccanti.com.
That's it. So, Sabrina Sbaccanti, and you know, it can't go wrong. You know,
yeah, I mean, the name
of
the
Google
brand,
it.
Right?
You can Google it, and we will find you. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I would like to say to all my audience, of course, you know, continue following Praticamente Inglese on the different channels. And I wish you a fantastic week ahead, as usual. And I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you very much again, Sabrina, and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Mattia. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye.
Bye.